Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
This is Radio Influence. The future is now.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence. The only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And welcome in, everybody, to the Thursday, November 30th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. So much to get to. Big weekend in the NFL. More importantly, big weekend in college football with conference championship weekend starting Friday night. Pac-12 championship game and the remainder of the games on Saturday. Certainly want to start and focus a lot on the coaching searching news out there. And going to spend some time, going to take you through a coaching search process and how this stuff kind of plays out. And kind of see, give you an idea of how it should be done through the whole process, not just from when you fire a coach, but even before that. So we'll take you through that and kind of give you some insights on that and how it should be done. And so many of these searches, some of them are very good, but some of them are so poorly handled. Speaking of poorly handled, let's start with the Tennessee latest, as Dave Doran has turned them down and going to stay at North Carolina State. We shall see where Tennessee turns next. There's still some good candidates out there, folks. Whether Tennessee can find him or not just remains to be seen, whether they can get a deal done. They have really botched this to this point, and it has become a national embarrassment for the university, one in which that is getting tougher and tougher to deal with. But they certainly have a chance to still get this done. Where do they go from here? Well, listen, I think there's Chad Morris out there, to me, would be very high on my list, the head coach at SMU. Jeremy Pruitt, Brent Venables already. Mike Norvell, if they can get over the Memphis coach stigma, would be outstanding. Certainly Kevin Steele, the defensive coordinator at Auburn, would be, as in a former Tennessee linebacker in the late 70s, 78-79, and a former head coach at Baylor years ago, 15 years ago. Has been around some great programs and would be really good fit for him. Which direction they go, who knows? Dan Mullen's putting his staff together, bringing over Todd Grantham with him as defensive coordinator. Oregon State officially gets Jonathan Smith, the former quarterback of the Beavers and now offensive coordinator of the Washington Huskies, heads back over there. The latest on Arkansas, they're waiting to see if they can make a run at Gus Malzahn. Now, they were turned down for their athletic director position by Kirby Hulcutt of Texas Tech. That is pivotal. Are they going to be able to get an athletic director in before make this run? I think you'll see guys like Chad Morris and Jeremy Pruitt and Brent Venables and Mike Norvell be in the mix if they make a run at Malzahn and can't get him. Gus Malzahn's going to get paid. There's no question about it. Auburn, Arkansas, we shall see. Nebraska's pretty quiet. Wonder why that is. Think they maybe have their guy? Feel they have their guy? We shall find out soon enough. But it appears all signs point to Scott Frost and him coming home. We'll see if they get that done as Scott has his team playing against Memphis this Saturday as they're playing for their conference championship. Really perplexed by the Herm Edwards hire. You're the athletic director, Ray Anderson, and you pay Todd Graham $11 million to walk away. Tells you that they didn't have a relationship that was worth saving in his eyes. And he's going to go out and hire a guy that has not coached in college football since 1989. And that was when he was a position coach at San Diego State, not even a coordinator. Has no background in college football, really no understanding. He's going to have to inherit coaches on his staff, and he's been told he's going to get middle of the Pac-12 type salary. How does that make any sense other than a publicity ploy to put a guy that's been on TV, that's a walking soundbite, to try to build your program? Oh, by the way, Ray Anderson used to be an agent, and one of his clients, you guessed it, was Herm Edwards. Makes no sense at all for a program that I thought was going to try to make a run at being good again, clearly doesn't have that at least a good plan for that. I think the biggest news remaining outside of what Tennessee's going to do and when is that drama going to end, so what is Jimbo Fisher going to do? Folks, I have said several times here that taking that final step is the toughest. But it's sounding like the only story left in the Jimbo Fisher is if he stays. That's where the story is going to be. I think that him staying would be the shock. Quite frankly, no one sees that even happening. It's like almost inevitable. There is some talk. By the time you listen to this, perhaps it will take place. There is some thought of forcing him to make a decision before the game Saturday against UL Monroe. You're in or you're out. Or do they let him finish the game? It'll be the president's call. He's got a good relationship with the president, but even that, I think, has been strained lately. I think any time between the time you hear this and Sunday morning, that it sounds like it's going to be a definite that he takes the move over Texas A&M. I don't think that it is the relationship's repairable at this point. So that would open up Florida State. We'll get into that when it happens, and I know Willie Taggart is higher on their list. But we'll see. Does Willie want to go? Does he want to accept that new offer at Oregon and the extension and stay there? Does Gus lose Saturday and bolt for Arkansas and create that opening there? Or is the opening going to still be at Arkansas if Gus stays at Auburn? A lot of things going on, and we'll certainly keep you updated. The immediacy of the coaching searches, folks, you got to follow us on Twitter, at Landry Football. It's the best way to do it. As we get it, we put it up there. Pure and simple, within seconds. So it's the quickest way for you to check it out. Of course, the in-depth film room breakdowns and the inside information in detail, you can get that on LandryFootball.com. A lot of free information. This podcast is free, of course. But the inside information, the film room analysis that we take you into, that's what LandryFootball.com is all about. You want to check us out. And I want to remind anybody that if you are interested in growing your business, contact us at LandryFootball.com. You can hit contact Chris, and we will show you how you can become involved in this program. And we can grow your business, help you do that, and we're so appreciative of how we've been able to grow ours here. But certainly keep you updated. By the way, got a special discount. Check it out on the website. Holiday discount. Now to the end of December, 67% off. Folks, $49.99 for a year. It'll take care of you for the entire rest of the football season. Recruiting, free agency, the draft, all of the off-season breakdowns of personnel, all of next football season, all for $49.99. Folks, it's the best I could do. It's not going to help us out a whole lot financially, but if it helps you out, we want to get you involved. So take advantage of that at LandryFootball.com today. But you got to get it done before the end of the year. I'm not keeping that up very long, I can assure you. All right, I want to get into some coaching search processes and how, and we're going to get into the film breakdowns in a second on the games, but how a coaching search should be handled and how the process should take place and maybe where some of those folks make mistakes in terms of their process of dealing with searches. The first thing you need to know about a coaching search is how to handle it. And there's a constant research of coaching prospects that should be done. It should be never-ending. And the problem is that you have athletic directors, and I've said this before, that are not from a football background, so their ability to evaluate is hindered. I believe, and it's part of what I do, so I'm biased, that everyone should have a full dossier on all candidates, scouting reports, evaluations, whether you'd consider hiring them or not, whether you have an opening, whether you're, you know, a school that has a young coach that's got a lifetime contract and he might be there for 20 years. Who cares? You need to study coaching prospects. You need to know who are the good ones out there. I hate to be so morbid, but what happens if your coach gets in a horrific accident and all of a sudden you got to hire a coach? And he may be the greatest coach in the country, and you may never fire him, and he may never leave. But what if something tragic happens? I don't mean to be so blunt or shocking, but my point is it should never be, well, they've got their coach, they're not looking. That's your job. It's your job. Do you realize as a scout, you may have, if the Philadelphia Eagles, who have Carson Wentz as their future quarterback, they're still scouting quarterbacks. They're still studying quarterbacks. You don't ever know what you might need, what might turn around the table. Now, that's more volatile because a player can get injured a lot more than a coach can be debilitated with sickness, but you never know. Again, that's the first rule. And the ability to evaluate is limited by administrators because they can only look at records and make calls. But then again, you have to make it a part of your research. Talk to football people that know and get lists and check them twice and find out who's been naughty and who's been nice and who's really good and who's really, you know, puffed up, and cross-check it and talk to different people without saying, I talked to so-and-so and he said this. Don't do that. Talk independently. Make everybody that you talk to about candidates, make them feel like you're the only person that they've called. You've got to do that. Constantly update it. Don't wait till you have a need. And keep a consistent, constant database on all of these guys. Who are their reps? Where are they from? Their family situation? Complete background. I would have, with the money that these administrations make, I would have someone that is in charge of like an HR person type of background that would keep all of this data in play, and you feed that information into the computer so that you have it at a moment's notice. You want to have regular talks with representatives. Who are the agents of these players? Have a list of all the agents and who they represent. Know what the angles are. Talk to different people about, well, you know, is he angling for this job or that job? You know, don't trust what an agent says. Try to find out and get information. Remember, you got two ears and one mouth. Use them accordingly. If you do that well, you can learn a lot. Keep things quiet. Don't share it. See who keeps it quiet among the people you talk to. Float some things out there that are not true. They're an agent. See if it makes it around the circle. You know who you can trust. And you know how you do that is you talk to agent one, you float out this piece of information. Two, this one. Three, this one, that one. So all of a sudden, you know, if this stuff gets leaked out, well, you know it's tied to agent five that you talk to. Always know who you can trust and who you can't. If you feel like you're going to have to make a change, or it's possible that you're going to make a change, for whatever reason, then you got to have a plan in place of what you're looking for and who you want to target. See, it's kind of like having a draft, except the difference is you don't know when the draft is going to be. For us as scouts, we know when the draft is going to be. We know when recruiting period is going to be, but we don't know when the recruiting season for coaches is going to be. So you have to be prepared at any moment, at a moment's notice. You get a phone call, something tragic happens, boom. You're in the coaching business. You've done your work. It's too late to begin vetting. Have it vetted. Spend time. Utilize, you know, search firms to get background information, whatever way you want to do it. I think it's almost worth spending the money in-house to do it that way. Have a full dossier, a scouting report, like you would on any college, high school prospect that you're bringing in. Have football contacts that you can call, that can ferret out, coaches, scouts I'm talking about, that can ferret out the level of interest, with the caveat that if it leaks out, it's no deal. So let's just say you are at a place and you've got an opening. If you're Tennessee, it's pretty obvious that you need to be prepared. Now, it doesn't matter if it's week three or week four. You do your job. And if the coach finishes and you keep him, that's great. The work is not for naught. It's still great, valuable information. But now if you're starting and you're doing a great background on all of these guys, you should know long before you ever terminate a head coach who you want to hire. You should know, hey, I want to talk to these five guys, these three guys, these two guys, these eight guys, these nine guys, whatever. By that time, you should have already ferreted out whether someone would be interested or not. And here's the thing. You got to use contacts because you're not going to know as an athletic director. You need to get a feel for, is this guy going to use you? Like I told LSU, you know, Jimbo Fisher wasn't coming. Jack Del Rio, when they hired Les Miles, told them they were interested. I told LSU they weren't interested. There are a lot of these situations that come across. You can't be wasting around your time spinning wheels with guys that are going to use you. And there are ways you can go about it. Here's what we need to do. You're in, you're out. Talk to your guy. Get him to sit there. If there's not much of an interest, move on to the next guy and try to figure it out. You're not hiring anybody. You're not making a decision at any point. You're just gathering information about level of interest. See, if you do all of your homework and you have all the background of anybody that you would consider and you have all the football evaluations and then you can sit there and narrow it down and you can have a big list at that point. You could have 24 guys on that list at that point, believe it or not. And then you could say, who's more likely? And it's kind of like recruiting, like when I was a recruiting coordinator. You simply say, these are the guys and where they're leaning and, you know, this guy would likely go here. He probably wouldn't take our job. This guy might. You have them in categories. So, boom, you go in, and once you have the opening, then you go quickly to your top guy, get a deal done, put a time limit on it, and then you move on. And you go to the second guy and talk to him in third, fourth, fifth, sixth, while you're still waiting to hear from the first one. So that immediately you haven't made offers, but you're trying to work several deals. And at that point, you don't make the final offer, and you end up doing the deal with your highest-ranked guy that's willing to come. It's no different than recruiting. It's no different. It's just dealing with coaches, and it's dealing with money and agents and contracts. So there's a difference on that part. What I mean is no difference in evaluating and how you stack them on your board. You have to have that. I'm a believer, and it should be held in secrecy, that you have a board. You don't have to have it physically, but in your computer, you should have a board of that. And you move on with the process of making sure that when it's time to make that move, all the evaluation and the considerations and who you consider, that's already done. So you don't worry about rumors. You know, with rumors today, most of the rumors are not true. People kind of know that half of them are not true. They're fiction. You develop relationships where you know who is using leverage and who's really interested. You can find that out. You can find out who might be interested, who might be using you. There's a simple way if you're not sure. You sit down, make an offer. This is the offer. If you're interested, it's good here. This is what we're thinking. You've got if you talk to an agent, talk to a candidate, and they seem interested, then the next step is test their level of interest. And there are things you can do to test their level of interest. And one of the things is, if it gets out, if I hear your name associated with this job, you're done. That tells me I can't trust you, that you're using it for leverage. If it's quiet, and they simply think about it, and then you give them a 24-hour period, a 12-hour period, whatever the case may be, hey, this is the deal done. This is no different than, again, I go back to all of my work in this. I tie it to what I've done as a recruiting coordinator, what I've done as a scout and a scouting coordinator, front office executive. Same thing as doing free agents. Hey, we want your guy. This is what we're willing to offer. This is what we got. We'll give you couple of hours. We're also moving on to someone else. If I don't hear from you within an hour, 2 hours, you know, we're moving on. You know, keep me posted, but I can't promise you this offer is going to be on the table. Make them understand that you've got other options, and you're not the only guy we're looking at. We've got some other guys, and don't be afraid to say, yeah, we like you, we'd consider you. This is what we are willing to offer. If you're willing to take it, let us know, and we'll go from there. I won't repeat your name. You won't repeat my name. We'll keep it quiet because there's only two of us that know, or three of us that know with the agent. If it gets out there, then quite simply, no, I'll make sure that I'll get it out to the media that we never considered you. If you're going to use this as leverage, we'll embarrass the hell out of you. If you're going to be quiet and honest and considerate the job, then that tells me a lot about whether I'd want you or not anyway. And then we can make that decision whether we have a deal or not. You develop those relationships. You know who's using leverage and who's really interested. And look, you can get a feel on the numbers with the agent of what it's going to take. Just in case, here's what we're going to need to know. You can't do that. He's not interested. He's going to wait. Well, guess what? We're not waiting. We're moving on, and we've got some other people. He's not interested. That's fine. He wants to wait to the end. That's fine. He wants to wait to the end of the year. That's fine. We've got other options. Get a feel for it. Again, these athletic directors and school administrators get worked by these agents. Get the numbers. What is it going to take? This is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to pay. That's that. Have other options to go to. Before you fire a coach, you have to have the plan which you're looking for, and you have to have the candidates that fit that plan. You don't sit there after the football season and just sit down and try to figure out who you're going to recruit. You do that for 2 and 3 years. Why should it be different as a coach? You evaluate coaches all year long. You rely on people that know how to evaluate. You can at least, I think, spend money for outside people that are in the football business to evaluate who the best coaches are and have a scouting report on each coach in your dossier. Being repetitive, but I'm doing it for emphasis. You do it all year long, every year. You're always ready to have to hire a coach. And it's not just head coaches, it's assistant coaches. I want to make sure, you know, when a head coach wants some assistance or ideas, what about this guy? What about that guy? The head coach has to make his own decisions on his staff. But I can tell you this, I've worked where head coaches obviously make the decisions on their staff, but I've said, you know, you might ought to think about this. You might not want to do that. And, you know, if you do it quietly and everything and man to man, they'll come back and thank you for making sure I didn't make the mistake. Or that was a good idea. I checked into that. I'm good with that. Don't worry. You need to be up to date on coaches, assistant coaches, coordinators, position coaches. You got to have it. You can get a deal done with an agent before the job is open. If you know the right person, you swear to secrecy or the deal is off, you do it one-to-one. When you get others involved, that's when leaks get out. That's when you get used. Let's take an example. Let's take Mississippi State. Now, here's a school that had to be aware that Dan Mullen might take a job. Well, they were right on it, weren't they? I mean, it was like hardly nothing before Dan Mullen is not even landing in Gainesville, and Mississippi State's already got Joe Moorhead coming into town. Well, why is that? You know why? They were prepared. They understood what type of person would fit their job. Mississippi State's not Alabama. You know, they're not Ohio State. They're a good program. They've got a lot to offer. They knew what guys fit. It's like recruiting at Bowling Green versus recruiting at Ohio State. You're not recruiting the same players, but you're looking for those same criteria when you're evaluating players. Same thing as coaching. Look at a guy who'd be really good. They had a process already in place evaluating these guys, And then they quickly went through it, and boom. At the interview, face-to-face, and it was over and it was done. Now, if Joe wasn't the right guy or if they interviewed a couple other people, it might have taken maybe a day longer. But they were ready. They were on it. Tennessee, pretty obvious. What were they doing? They were hanging on to Butch Jones a little longer. Didn't want to get into the, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff. So they weren't quite prepared on evaluating. John Curry had an idea. Then things kind of got sideways a little bit. They bring Peyton Manning in, you know, get some ideas from him. They got some ideas from Jim Haslam. They got all these cooks in the kitchen and different ideas, and they're going to do this and going to do that, and they're going to be swayed by public opinion. And all now they're sitting there with an open wound coaching search, and they're still trying to evaluate candidates. I'm still talking to people associated. What about this guy? What about that guy? And I'm thinking, why the hell don't you know about Mike McIntyre and Mike Bobo and Jeremy Pruitt and Brent Venables? Well, you know, why don't you know about these guys and know? You should already know whether they're a fit or not. You should have made that determination. Listen, that should have been done a couple of years ago. Again, don't know Butch Jones could have been a great coach, and had he done that, you don't. It's just not wasted time, folks. It's the most important decision you're going to make. So why don't you have the full evaluation on these guys? Why are you still trying to evaluate them and trying to decide whether a guy's a fit or not? Have a plan. May not work. It may be a bad plan, but have a plan. Don't get caught with your pants down. Don't do, haven't you learned from what Joe Oliva did not do for LSU, and Jimbo Fisher was his only guy. Didn't do a good enough job vetting other candidates. They weren't comfortable with another candidates because they didn't do enough work. Boom. They just, you know, quickly. And listen, Joe Oliva deserves credit. By comparison, his coaching search was great compared to what Tennessee's done. Again, it's something to learn going forward that I think this process is one in which you've got to make sure that it is not a coaching search. A coaching search should be done uniform and unilaterally and constantly. You're always in a coaching search mode as an administrator. That's the way you need to look at it. That's what I teach and preach when I talk to these guys. What you are when you have an opening is a coaching hire mode. Coaching searches should be ongoing. Coaching hires are when a guy leaves, guy retires and gets fired, whatever the case may be. Boom, you're on it. You're ready to draft. You're ready to sign and offer the kid because you've already done the evaluation. You don't need to sit there and evaluate and see whether he's a fit. You already know if he's a fit. You know whether a guy is a fit or not long before your job gets open. So do your work then. Don't show up the day before the test and try to write, you know, scramble and write an essay that should have been planned out long time ago. It's what you learned in school, didn't you? It's the same principles, folks. So anyway, that's how things should be done. There are a couple of quick things. There's a lot of information that goes out in coaching searches on in the media. There are ways that you can float things out in the media to send a trial balloon, to kind of send a signal one way and see how it might be perceived or whatnot. If that's important to you, then do it. So if Tennessee wanted to hire Greg Schiano, what they should have done is kept it quiet, get the deal done. Nobody say anything. Get the deal done. Show up at a press conference. You don't have time for people to protest and go crazy on social media. Sure, they're going to do it after for a day or two, and then all of a sudden, he's out recruiting. He's putting a good staff together, and to hell with what anybody else is saying. You found your guy, and stick to it, by God. If you're concerned about that press, if you are, and I think if you are, you're kind of weak as an AD. But if that's important to you, winning the press conference is important to you, then there's ways you can float it out there to see how it might be perceived and then weigh it then. You don't sit there and let it go out that, we're negotiating and a deal's going to be done, by God, and then it blows up in your face, and then you're having to back out of a deal. Embarrassing. Because no doubt that the perception of Tennessee football and the Tennessee's administration went down significantly after the Greg Schiano situation. Now, if you didn't think Greg Schiano was a fit for you as a Tennessee fan, that's your business and your prerogative. But I'm just going to tell you that in the world that I live in the coaching realm, they look at that and say, weak administration, I don't know if I can trust them. I don't know if that's something I want to be a part of. So keep that in mind. Something to keep in mind. So how you deal with the media is important. I've been asked at times to come out publicly, you know, and by sports information directors, come to me and say, hey, you know, because they'll get a sports writer or something referred to me, or a sports writer will come to me and ask me, what do you think about so-and-so as a candidate? And if I feel pretty good about him, I'll say, yeah, he'd be a good coach at a number of places, and he'd probably be a good fit at ABC school. You know, float it out there and to give something positive if you want to hire a guy and you think it may not be popular. There are a lot of ways to do it, to utilize the media. Make the media work for you, not make the media work you. And I think that's what happens sometimes. And as it regards to these news cycle of coaches, always remember that if you don't source it from both ends, what good is it? You know, clearly the Tennessee media is got to be some of the worst around because they haven't gotten hardly anything right in this whole process. And, for example, in the Jeff Brohm deal, it came out that a deal, they're going to announce them, a deal's going to get done. You check with the Brohm folks, as I did, he said they didn't even meet. He even said, you know, talked on the phone briefly, and it never was more than that. How can you run with a deal? Well, I know how you run with a deal. You got a source at Tennessee, and he tells you that. A, it's not a good source because he's telling you something that's wrong. He's getting wrong information. Or B, he's lying to you, which I don't know why he would do that if he's a good source and you have a relationship with him. But C, he may think something is there, but they're clearly out of touch if they thought they had a deal done with Jeff Brohm because there was nothing on the Brohm side that indicated that that was even close, that was even in the works. Make sure, folks, if you're out there and you want to believe stuff, get it from both sides. I know for me, I'm not into breaking news. We try to put information up there as quickly as possible. We try to get the accurate information, and accurate as it is firsthand from people we know. I can't confirm that somebody's 100% going to do something. Nick Saban told me himself he wasn't going to Alabama. There's not more I can do than say, you know, Nick says he's not going. Now, he changed his mind. Did he lie? I don't know. But I can tell you, if I don't get it firsthand, I don't know who to trust secondhand. I mean, you might tell me that you're going to have a salad for lunch, but you can go to a restaurant and get a sandwich. I don't know. If I'm there with you and I see it and I'm involved in it, which I am on a lot of this, then I kind of know firsthand. And most of the time, if I know firsthand, I can't say. But I also can know enough to say, yeah, from both sides, it's there. Double check it. Get at least two or three verifications on one side, two or three on the other side. Be right. You know, what's the old saying in journalism? Get it first, but first get it right. I know today it's get it first. And, you know, there's so much of guessing. And I'm going to just tell you, guessing and being right is not knowing. It's just guessing. It's, you know, it means nothing. And again, I think it's something you want to keep in mind as a consumer how things are playing out. Okay, want to get into the games of the weekend and how they might play out. Now, let's start a little bit with USC Stanford on Friday night. You know, it's maybe a nondescript game. USC is the more explosive team, and they're the better team. Bryce Love, Stanford will play well. Stanford can win this game because they're so well coached. They're physical. They're not as dominant physically up front as they have been in the past, but this is a good team. USC's a little more explosive, and with Sam Darnold, I think this gives them a little bit more of an edge. Freshman quarterback Stanford, though, is really good. And we'll see how this plays out. USC I'll take in a game in which they should win. We'll see if they're able to take care of business. Florida Atlantic, North Texas. I think this Florida Atlantic team's just more talented in the Conference USA Championship. Beat a North Texas team that's good. I think pretty good offensively. Just can't match the offensive output of FAU. And defensively, they don't match up very well at a lot of the spread. Run-pass options that Florida Atlantic runs. Memphis, I think, will play Central Florida really well. But I just don't see them beating Central Florida. This is a team that's on a mission. I think it's focused. I think that Scott Frost has allowed it to not be a distraction. The coaching rumors about him, I think they take care of business and get it done at home. Like Toledo, a little bit over Akron. I think they've been a little bit more consistent team in the MAC. I think that... That Troy is a little better than Arkansas State, and it's how I see that. And I like this Fresno State team coached by Jeff Tedford in the Mountain West Conference Championship game. I think the team's been really good. In terms of the big matchups, the Big 12 Championship game. Listen, I think TCU does the best job of matching patterns on defense in the Big 12. I think they're very good. To be good, TCU just doesn't score enough on offense to be able to beat Oklahoma. You can hold them to 28 points, and that's a good effort defensively against this Oklahoma offense, but can you score 30? That's what you have to be able to do, and I'm not sure that TCU can do it. So I think as it goes forward, I look for Oklahoma to win this game. Georgia-Auburn, match rematch. What can Georgia do any differently? Well, listen, Auburn is the better team at the line of scrimmage. There's no debating that in my view. I think the whole issue is, can Georgia defensively do something to slow down the Auburn run game? If they can, they've got a shot here. They've got a shot at making it closer because, folks, if you can do a better job getting off the field, and you can get more offensive snaps, meaning put Auburn's defense on the field more, then you got a chance of wearing them down a little bit. And then they're not as effective on snap 78 as they are on snap 52. It's just common sense, but people overlook it at times. It's a big part of it. I thought that was a big key, that Georgia defensively could not slow down Auburn's run, and that's where I thought they could have more success. I knew that Georgia would struggle on the offensive line against Auburn's defensive front, but I did not see the struggles that they would have defensively being so great against Auburn's run game. Now, Auburn's health at running back is a big factor in this game. If they can control the line of scrimmage offensively and run the football like they did against Georgia, they're going to win and might win as decisively as they did the last time. But if health is an issue and they're not as consistent running the football, they're not nearly as effective of a team because their ability to pass the football comes out of the running game. So that's where I think Georgia has to be appreciably better. Georgia has to be a winner here on special teams, create a short field for their offense. I think it's going to be a challenge for Georgia on offense. You're dealing with a pocket quarterback and tough to build a pocket versus a very good defensive front that can get home with pressure with their base. So I think what has to happen is Georgia is going to have to work the perimeter in the passing game to open up to the run game. Because if Georgia can't run the football, then they're not going to win it. They're not going to win on offense. They're not going to be successful enough on offense. So how do you get to the running game? If you have to get to the running game, you don't do it by running through the brick wall and it doesn't work. You've got to do some things to work the edges to get Auburn to run, basically to run and chase wide. And then you come back and you work inside. And again, if defensively you're better, you can force Auburn on the field a little bit more, and then you get them worn down a little bit. That's the real key. This is where people, I think, miss football in the pure sense of preparation. Offense, defense, and special teams are three phases, but they're all locked together. How you play offense affects how you play defense and vice versa, and both of them affect how you play special teams. People I think, miss that sometimes. Ought to be a good one. Auburn looks like the better team, but can Georgia, more of a neutral feel, 50-50 ticket split, got the edge of maybe learning some things that they could do a little different in this game, and defensively in particular. Let's watch Georgia's defense. If Georgia wins, they're going to win with their defense, and their offense is going to have success as a result of their defense getting off the field and forcing Auburn's defense on the field more. That's how Georgia wins it if they can. Auburn, certainly the better line of scrimmage team. We'll see how it plays out. Clemson-Miami, I think this Miami team at its best could play with Clemson. I think they're very athletic, but they've not played well away from home. They've played well in two games. Clemson's the better team. Both of these teams have had some focus problems, but when they're focused, they're really good. Clemson's the better of the two. Clemson's got more war daddies on defense, more difference makers on defense. They've been here before. They win the game. Clemson will have to have an off game. Miami's going to have a great game. I think both will play well, and I think Clemson will win in a pretty exciting game. Wisconsin, Ohio State. People ask me, where's the biggest upset? Well, is it an upset? I think Ohio State's favored in the game. I'll just put it this way. I think Wisconsin clearly has been the more consistent team of the two. They're very underrated on defense. They're very athletic and very underrated athletically on the defensive front. Make a lot of plays. Very good-looking, solid football team. Offensively, they turn over the football too much. That has been their bugaboo and could hurt them and kill them. Can't turn the football over against Ohio State. Ohio State's best game can win it, but where are they going to get their success in the passing game? Can they get it? Can JT Barrett, who had arthroscopic surgery on his knee on Sunday, is going to play, how effective will he be running? All those things are key. Listen, in a one-game scenario, you definitely look at the personnel advantages for Ohio State and say they're better. But Wisconsin is a tough team to beat. I don't see this as this kind of blowout type of game that we've seen in the past. I think Wisconsin has truly been the most consistently good, best team in the Big Ten this year, and I think Ohio State's best game can win it. But anything less than that, they fall short, in my opinion. Going to be interesting to see, obviously. We know what has to happen in terms of who can make it in the playoffs and who cannot. The teams that can control their destiny are the two ACC championship game teams, two SEC championship game teams in Oklahoma and Wisconsin. Everybody else needs some help. Ohio State beats Wisconsin, maybe they get in. Maybe they control it, but I'm not ready to say that yet. That's going to rely on a committee vote. I think if chalk holds, the committee go home early. That'll be easy. But the Ohio State-Alabama debate will rage if Ohio State wins. And who you put in, Ohio State or Alabama? You put in the better team, Alabama, or you put in the Ohio State team that won their conference? You didn't do it last year. Be interesting to see. Boy, it would be real interesting to see the committee talk themselves out of that scenario. Quickly, NFL. Boy, listen, the matchups are getting bigger and bigger because there are less variables left. But really, the NFC South is where I want to go. Saints and Panthers tied for the division lead. Saints beat the Panthers in their first meeting. And the Saints play Atlanta twice in the latter part of the year. This huge game at home for New Orleans, if they can get it done, they basically won't wrap up anything, of course, but they'll have essentially a one-game lead over Carolina that's really a two-game lead. And then, obviously, we'll have their chances against Atlanta. Atlanta's got a tough matchup at home against Minnesota, a very good team in their own right. Minnesota's practically locked up the North. Really good team. Run the football. Case Keenum's playing well. Very good defense. So the NFC South is where it's at. Now, New England's rolling. Take care of Buffalo. Want to see what Jacksonville does at home against Indianapolis. Should be a win. Tennessee's got Houston at home. They need to win to keep up with Jacksonville. That division's in a little bit of of intrigue there. In terms of Kansas City's got the Jets, the Chargers, host Cleveland. Kansas City's got to take care of business on the road here. They need to get back on track. This is no gimme yet by any stretch against the Jets. Chargers will win at home against Cleveland, and we're talking about tie for that division lead if it happens. Now, the Raiders host the Giants, the hapless Giants, so they win. You could have a three-way tie in that division if Kansas City doesn't win. So that is some level of intrigue. The AFC is about New England and Pittsburgh in race for home field advantage. So looking at New England, you're looking at Pittsburgh and their games against Buffalo. And Pittsburgh, their game Monday night against Cincinnati, are big for home field advantage. Eagles trying to hold on to home field advantage in their own right. Obviously playing good ball. They play Sunday night against Seattle. The big game because it means something in that home field race, but it's also important for Seattle, of course, as they try to hold on to playoff hopes and possibilities. They're chasing and are right with the NFC South teams for a wild card and still not out of the division race with the Rams, who got a tough schedule the rest of the way. So, folks, the NFC West, the NFC South, a little bit of AFC South and AFC West, and then home field advantage is what we're looking at this weekend. We're going to take a look at all these games on Tuesday, kind of keep you up to date on where we are with the coaching search stuff. But certainly it relates to the NFL. The Giants are indefinitely or in the possibility, strong possibility of making a coaching change. Well, but nothing's imminent there. Although there is possibility he could lose his job before the end of the year. We likely see a change there at the general manager spot. But we'll break down all the games. Hope you enjoyed the coaching search process podcast today. We appreciate you joining us. Tell everybody what we're doing here at LandryFootball.com and the Landry Football Podcast. We'd really appreciate it. Want to keep doing it and want to have great folks like you that are listening be a part of our family. So check us out. Get all the discounts at LandryFootball.com. Holiday discounts, you'll want to take advantage of it. Check it out. Enjoy the games this weekend. We'll be here to wrap it up and keep you up to date on everything going on the world of football on the next edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.